Now these many sons each produce hundreds and hundreds of grandsons in this way. The whole city of Panchala became overcrowded by these sons and grandsons of King Paranjana. Therefore, we must remember that Paranjana is a living entity. The city Panchala is the body. The body is the field of activities for the living entity, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Kshetra, Kshetrajna. There are two constituents. One is the living entity, the other is the body of the living entity. Any living entity can know that he is covered by the body, if he only contemplates the body a little bit, just with a little bit of contemplation, he comes to understand the body is his possession. One can understand this by practical experience and by authority of the Shastras. The Bhagavad Gita said that he knows me, Dante, hey, proprietor of the body, the soul is within the body. The body is taken as the functional desh, or the field of activities where the living entity can enjoy the senses in the relationship with five sense objects, namely Gandha, Rasa, Rupa, Sparsha, and Sabda. That is, sense objects made of earth, water, fire, air, and sky. Within this material world, covered by the material body of subtle and gross matter, every living entity creates actions and reactions, which are here known allegorically as sons and grandsons. There are two kinds of actions and reactions, namely pious and impious. In this way, our material existence becomes coded by different actions and reactions. Regards Sri Narottam Das Thakur says, fruitive activities and mental speculation are simply cups of poison. Whoever drinks of them, thinking them to be nectar, must struggle very hard, life after life, in different types of bodies. Such a person eats all kinds of nonsense and becomes condemned by its activity to so-called sense enjoyment. Thus, the field of action and reactions by which one's descendants are increased begins with sex life. Pranishna increases his whole family by begetting sons who, in their turn, begot grandsons. Thus, the living entity being inclined towards sexual gratification becomes involved in many hundreds of thousands of actions and reactions. In this way, he remains within the material world simply for the purpose of sense gratification and transmigrates from one body to another. His process of reproducing so many sons and grandsons results in so-called societies, nations, communities, and so on. All these communities, societies, nations, and dynasties and nations simply expand from sex life, as explained by Prahlad Maharaja and Maitri Nadi Griyamedi Sukamni Tucham. A Griyamedi is one who wants to remain within this material existence. This means he wants to remain within the body of society, enjoy friendship, love, and community. His only enjoyment is in increasing the number of sex enjoyers. He enjoys sex and produces children, who in their turn marry and produce grandchildren. The grandchildren also marry and in their turn produce great-grandchildren. In this way, the entire earth becomes overpopulated, and then suddenly their reactions provoked by material nature in the form of war, famine, pestilence, and earthquakes, etc. Thus, the entire population is again extinguished simply to be recreated. This process is explained in Bhagavad Gita as repeated creation and annihilation, due to lack of Krishna consciousness, all this creation and annihilation is going on under the name of human civilization. This cycle continues due to man's lack of knowledge of the soul and the supreme personality of Krishna. Translation: these many sons, each produce hundreds and hundreds of grandsons. In this way, the whole city of Panchala became overcrowded by these sons and grandsons of King Paranjana. So here we see that the city is the body, and Paranjana was the soul, and what combination with his intelligence produced all these different children, who produced more children. And so this indicates that we develop desires, we sense objects, we do actions, we create karmas, and we develop situations to those, and then again we create more actions and do more karmas. So in this way, unlimitedly we propagate karma and desires in this material world. Of course, we'll see in the Vedic literature, in the Karma Yoga section, and the samskaras, varnashram, etc., one of the goals is to increase the population. But of course, if we look at the purport, it's all Maya. But that is one of the goals, to increase the population. Therefore, in the marriage samskara, it says maybe you have 10 sons or whatever like that. So it's a blessing to have many children. Of course, this is something which was necessary when there was less population. When there's too much population, then of course it's not so desirable. Yeah? Nevertheless, it is one of those Vedic injunctions, more or less, that you increase the population, you increase the number of progeny, etc. And we'll see from the beginning of the day of Brahma, this is Brahma's idea to increase the progeny. So, to a certain extent, that is valid, because at the beginning there was nobody there, so therefore they had to increase the population. And so that is there within the Vedas, that the population must be increased. At the same time, we see that this leads to Maya, this leads to entanglement in the material world. So this is a basic contradiction we'll have. How to preserve humanity and the population and civilization, etc., so that one can practice something, anything, whether it's karma yoga, jnana yoga, or astanga yoga, or bhakti yoga, and at the same time not fall into Maya. The dangers are there. If there's no system at all, of course, then inevitably one must fall into karma and the entanglement of karma in the mode of ignorance. So the varnashram system there is at least to try to elevate people in the gunas, even if they are in Maya. So that's a better proposition. still it's not perfect. So at the top of the Varnashram system, then we have the idea of moksha, and then we have jnana supply, so that you can stop the process of karma and birth and death. So that is, the, say, the positive aspect of Varnashram. But in terms of bhakti, it is negative, because that also discourages bhakti. If one becomes too attached to the liberation aspect, then one is not inclined to bhakti. So therefore, that becomes unfavorable for bhakti. So that is why Lord Chaitanya more or less rejected this whole Varnashram system, Artha, Dharma, Kama, and Moksha. Because ultimately it's either Maya or Jnana, and that is unfavorable for bhakti. Nevertheless, one needs some sort of environment to live. So we have the Varnashram system there for that purpose, so that people can survive. So, of course, most people are not interested in spiritual lives, so therefore, for them, this type of engagement is there, gradual elevation, rules and regulations, so that they can live peacefully in the material world. Of course, it's Maya, but that is the compromise there for people who are not interested in spiritual life. Of course, attached to the system is some commitment to spiritual life, so therefore within the Varnashram system itself, they do have to worship Devatas, and they have to worship Vishnu also. So that is that much commitment they have to some sort of spiritual life, but it is a minor aspect. And so because of that, it's ultimately condemned. It does not lead directly to bhakti. So you can do Varnashram billions of years, it doesn't mean you'll end up with bhakti. You can get the Sattva-gun, it doesn't lead to bhakti. You can get to Jnana, yes, but you cannot get to bhakti. So therefore the real process is to simply do bhakti. The origin of bhakti is only bhakti and the mercy of devotees. So therefore the recommendation of Bhagavatam is to simply concentrate on this process. So what do we do about our bodies in the material world? We have to support our bodies. The rule, the basic rule, as outlined in the Nectar of Devotion among the Angas of Bhakti, the first 10, is that you take what you need somehow or other, whatever you need for your subsistence, you take that. But you don't try to take more than that. One lives very simply. And in this way, one goes on in the material world. Of course, one has to, at the same time, avoid sinful activities, etc., since this will create further bondage in the material world. So, therefore, the devotee, to some degree, can follow aspects of the Varnashram system to avoid sinful activities and control the senses, etc. Though his main shelter is bhakti, so he can use these other rules of Varnashram to support his material body, etc. So therefore we have rules for the body, cleanliness, how to dress, etc. We have rules for family life and samskaras, etc. Social interaction, respect one member to the other. So this is taken from Varnashram system. It's not absolute, because bhakti is only absolute. And as we see, Krishna himself breaks the system sometimes. He does not always follow the Varnashram system. So we take the Varnashram system as much as possible. We follow some principles to help us support the body and the mind, etc. And so to that degree, we have some acceptance of Varnashram. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur calls this the Gona Vidhi of Bhakti. And these are secondary rules of Bhakti, whereas the primary rules are the ones mentioned in Nectar Devotion. That is the 64 elements. So in there, we don't find mention. In the 64 elements, we don't find instructions, you must follow all Dharma and Varnashram, etc. It doesn't say that. It's not one of the rules. And in fact, previous, after that it says, Varnashram is not an Anga of Bhakti. It's not, because it doesn't directly give Bhakti at all. Whereas if you hear it chant, yes, you get bhakti. But if you do varnashram, it doesn't guarantee bhakti, you just become jnani name. So therefore, it's not included as an anga of bhakti, as one of the primary actions of bhakti itself. It's taken as a secondary role, merely to support the body and allow for a peaceful social interaction. Now, to that degree, the devotee follows those elements. So that is the relationship between bhakti and varnashram system, etc. So in this way, though the Bhagavatam here sometimes glorifies and sometimes condemns varnashram, here we see it's more or less condemned the whole system because it simply leads to more material entanglement. It does have some good aspects which the devotees can use since they are favorable for devotional service. So that degree the devotee can follow. He may follow, but then he may also give up at a certain point. So therefore we have Lord Chaitanya, he says, give up everything. So therefore we have that the position of a person who is beyond varnashram completely. And that is the Babaji. He is not bound by any of the rules of any ashram and any of the signs of any ashram. So either option is there. The devotee for convenience can follow the system or he can give it up also either way. In either case, he should not be attached. So that is the relationship of the devotee to that system.
How do we see it in case of devotees? There are some devotees in the temple and then there are a lot of devotees outside. So how should one decide whether supposedly one is supposed to be in the temple and is serving Krishna rather than trying to arrange resources for his own mental health? This is done in fact by the temple. But then there are devotees who stay outside and they try to maintain themselves. So on what basis one decides that what
is... I think it is your own preference. It's your own preference. Whether one wants to accept the standards of the temple or one has some other standard that one needs for the family. That's all. So it's one's own personal preference.
Well, Maharaj, usually what I understood is that it is more in terms of financial requirements of individuals. I mean...
Well, why do they require it? Because they want that. It's like it's a preference, in other words. Some people may survive on, you know, very simply, very, very simply, and they don't care about education for the children or anything. So then they will have less. Some people want their children to get a university degree, so they require more money. So you know, in that sense, there's different standards in one sense, which are, you know, your one's own preference.
I asked
one
question,
he
said, if you accept voluntary poverty, then you can join
the... Yeah. So in other words, one has to take a lower standard. If one is just a higher standard, then one will have to work outside or whatever for that.
Because sometimes our Prabhupada instructions are also there, there is a greater part than Prabhupada, and the should actually stay out. They should work, and they should practice, and they
should... And give half their money. And then they'll be back. We better work in the temple, some will say. It'll be harder to do that. Because they'll have the same standards in the temple, but they have to work harder. So then that's the problem also. Anyway, yeah, if one is, a temple has enough, you know, people anyway, then it's better that the grass is outside and then he supports the temple. That's an ideal situation. But sometimes temples need devotees, so therefore they support the grass as well.
Actually, the scientist said to Bhaktivinoda Thakur Maharaj, he burned outside, he maintained his family, and then he did some of the devotional service.
Well, there was no inside anyway for them. There was no ISKCON then.
He said that for Namahata, the person should be always hiding outside. In this Gaurava Makalpa, they said that...
Well, he didn't have temples as such.
with brahmacharyas. There was no concept of that at that time. There was no concept of that. That was introduced to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, where you have a mutt with brahmacharyas in it. Before that, it was simply congregational, no temple.
ग्रंथराज श्री श्री श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय दोनों स्वामी महाराज की जय जीवन के श्री श्री प्रति संपूर्ण प्रभुपाद की जय अजो प्रमेय
जुगाल तो हरे
हरे हैं हैं
हां